Hi, Sandra. I would like to talk about subjective science for the simple reason that there are a lot of people who are talking about objective science, forgetting that science had objectives and that most of objective science is as if object science. And I recently ran into a book which talked about denial of science. And that was really weird because that brings us back to the Inquisition, that science has become a dogma. You should believe it. You should not deny it. While the whole purpose of science is to deny dogma, to test dogma, to replace dogma by understanding, by research, and specifically not to believe anything science says, because science cannot be based on belief. It must be based on knowledge. And as new ways of looking at the world arise in humanity, new ways of seeing arise and new forms of science arise. So I think it's very important to talk about subjective science specifically because objective science is always based on subjective scientists. And if you look in detail, then the scientific object does not exist because it's always a linguistic object. It is a model. And this idea of comparing objective science to subjective science has been on my mind for a very long time. So I'm happy that it will be possible to put it out there now. And there is a reason to follow a couple of steps on that. Basically because it might help to clarify, first of all, how I got into it, why I now want to talk about subjective science while everybody's trying to impose or enforce his belief in objective science. And on the other hand, also that we need to be aware that objective science is the science of objects. And we cannot afford to have a science or politics which reduces people and life and humanity into objects. We must realize that people are subjects and subjective, and that is specifically not in the term of object or subject, subjecting from subjugating, throwing down under, but using the wrong terminology of subject as opposed to object, object referring to something that is measurable or visible or manifest out there, and subject as the opposite, which is invisible, imperceptible in here. And the whole purpose of that story is to make clear that objective science does not exist without subjective scientists, and that reality is not a scientific object, but it is a subjective realization. So let me start with a history of science. I've talked about that before in this development of classical science, relativistic theory, to probabilistic theory, to unified theory. And I've also already talked before about the shift in consciousness that corresponds with that, which is from the outsider observer to a reactor, to an interactor, to a creator. And that has to do with a different kind of consciousness. Because we are conscious of what we are, even if most of that is not conscious or subconscious and so on, we are less conscious of what we are in touch with, because there is another side of whatever it is that exists by itself without us already. And then we are even less conscious of that what we are not in touch with, which exists outside of us. And we are certainly not conscious of everything else that exists, because we don't even know it. But yet it is there. So when we account for the unknown in the known, and at some point I think I would like to talk about ignoscience, igno-science, which is the science of unknowing. Because when we talk about science dealing with what we know, then we should not assume by dogma or otherwise that that's everything that there is. No, that's simply that's everything there is to know. Even that is not correct, because that's simply what we know at that time. And a bit later we might see that there is more. A bit later we might be able to see how we can see that there is more. And maybe at some point we can even see that there's a lot that we cannot see. So ignoscience, the science of ignorance, is a very important foundation in science. And even though I will not talk about ignoscience now, it needs to be mentioned because the unknown is so much connected to what we do know. So from that perspective, I would then like to start with the history of science and the change in involvement, to later be able to address the consequence that that has. Because if science has changed, that means that the role of the scientist is different too. A scientist is not an outsider observer playing God. Scientists cannot pretend that they're ignorant or innocent of the damage that has been done by science, which has been done by scientists. And scientists cannot shirk the responsibility for having co-created a philosophy in which people are treated as if objects, and in a way also what artificial intelligence now wants to do, made subordinate to a machine. So we definitely need to fix this whole notion of objective science, show that it is false, that it is obsolete, shows that it has been replaced by other forms of science, show that we need to use these other forms of science, and actually that these other forms of science do not just arise from science, but they can only arise from a doubting and a denying of science. They can only emerge from a discovery of things which are unexplainable, things which were unknown, which means that the scientist has to doubt and question the scientist itself. The scientists need to question each other. They just cannot afford to have a concilium together and happily agree that they agree on something. They certainly cannot have these professorial fun and games of trying to shoot each other down so that they can get somebody else's position. But they need to be able and competent and willing to question what we find, what we believe, why we believe it. And as Popper said, we need to be willing always to disprove what we have been able to prove. Because science is not about knowing, it's about learning. And that's what science has been doing all the time. So let me start with this history of science, a recapitulation of what I have been talking about in previous recorded sessions. But it is necessary to put it in place because it was for me the fulcrum by which I was able to step out of the belief in objective science and come up with that notion of subjective science. So essentially, this is the history in which we changed from a science of objects to the need, the necessity to have a science of our own subjectivity. Much of philosophy aims to have that kind of looking into or questioning of our subjectivity, but a lot of philosophy fails because it tries to use the language of objective science in referring to what can be seen of people. And even though they got beyond the notion of craniology, looking at the skull and seeing that people who have more hindbrain space will have more hindbrain dynamics going on, and people who have more forebrain will have more forebrain dynamics going on. People now have come to shift that to the realization that there is also behavior, that you can look at what people do, but these descriptions of, say, psychology and psychiatry about human behavior are again most often limited to objectifiable or objective behavior, the behavior as if an object. And they do not account for the subjective behavior. So they talk about reflex behavior and repeatable behavior, that what can be seen and what can be written down because it can be recognized because it takes place again and again and again. And philosophers often base themselves on that kind of approach. So when they philosophize, they tend to refer to, let's call it, objective behavior. And that's where the Western philosophy then is much more limited than the Eastern philosophy, because there it was realized that whatever behavior we have, it is already based on something that we believe within us. And so Eastern philosophy, Buddhism, for example, understands that if we change our beliefs, then we can change our reality, because we change our realization. So in that approach, then the philosophy of the East is much more helpful than the philosophy of the West, for the simple reason that the philosophy of the West still looks at the outside, and the philosophy of the East is based on what happens on the inside. On the outside, others can see the same. On the inside, others cannot. Others can try to see the same, but only if they succeed in changing their mindset or changing the way they think or believe or feel about things. And then that philosophy connects to religion. Religion actually goes wrong at the moment that it says, well, if I believe that, then you believe that too. A generalization which is not allowable, because the other can believe that too or experience that too only if they already experience that and thereby believe it. So if it is imposed on somebody, it's like hypnotizing somebody or manipulating them, mind control, which is possible. Right? You can always give people a false belief and then they can hang on to it for as long as they like until they find out that it's not true. And that's where Buddhism and other philosophies of the East and say, well, at the moment that you let go of these beliefs, then you can actually see what's going on. I compare it to Buckminster Fuller, who said, okay, this what's going on now is not quite it. So he walked into the ocean, basically to step out of it. And then another part of him walked him out and said, well, you've just seen it wrong. It's a bit like the story of Jesus being crucified, basically cursing the universe and everything. Say, well, how can this happen? And then a moment later, realizing that he saw it wrong, which is the same story of that of Buddha, who was looking, and searching, couldn't find it. And when he stopped looking, then everything could fall in place. Basically, he was so busy raking up the mud that it could never settle so that he could see the water clear, the mind, and he needed to see the mind clear by stopping meddling with it. And in that same way, the Eastern philosophies realize that a religion cannot be functional if it is imposed on people. It can only work if it is received, realized, discovered by people. And then Buddhism and other schools of thought came up with techniques which seem to work for a lot of people, which is simply that if you focus on the body, specific emotions, breathing patterns, and so on, that you can see that there are internal dynamics which keep on going on, just as we have the heartbeat, we have the breathing that goes on, the heartbeat that goes on, the digestion that goes on, the cells that go on. they discovered that when we play with the breathing, we can actually slightly move the heartbeat, which can actually slightly move the blood circulation and the nutrition of the cells, which can energize the cells. So indirectly, we have a way to get to this inner working of the body, which basically is outside of our control, and mostly outside of our understanding. And so then they realized that inside it is possible to get in touch with the things which very much define us and are the foundation of what we are, but it is so fundamental that we cannot perceive it because it's the water in the fish, the water around the fish, it's us. So then in the mystery schools, they brought together the techniques by which people could help understand that, to look at that, discover that, discover that they could perceive things differently, that there are different functions in the body which can be activated differently. And through that, come to the insight that there are different ways of understanding reality. Because when you eliminate a belief, that what is around us doesn't change, but the way we perceive it changes. So in the East, we see how there are ways to do that. And now I would like to come back to the West, because the West, in a way, realized that too. But it is as if people deny what has happened. So this is where I would like to recapitulate what happened in science and how the evolution of science took place over, say, 200 years, a bit more. And that in science, there was this shift from looking at matter to discovering molecules to finding atoms, to finding that the foundation of everything is something which we cannot perceive, non-distinguishables and imperceptibles. So it means that the foundation of scientific objects or things lies in no things. The history of science is, in that sense, quite simple, and as I have talked about it before, I'd like to keep it short here. Essentially, science started because some people realized that the dogmatic hypnosis of the churches was not it. There were claims about what is and what should be, or what people should be, which were just not correct. The presence of wars showed that it was not a philosophy of peace. The presence of inquisitions and the burning of people showed that it was not a benevolent belief system. And had the description of what the universe would be like or should be like was not in accordance with what could be seen with the telescope. So with the discovery of the telescope, people started to look at things. And with the telescope, that's something you use for your own eye. You can actually directly see it. You don't need to believe what somebody tells you. You can start thinking differently. And that's where then people realize that what was being said and what was possible to see was not the same. So science was created. There are some assumptions that the first scientists were burned and eliminated because the churches basically wanted to have their narcissistic control over everything and everybody. And when people started to think for themselves, they didn't like that, so they burned them. And then a bit later, they couldn't so easily do that because people realized what was going on. A bit later, they could not do that, so they locked them up in their homes and thought they could get away with that. And then people realized, no, there was actually another way of thinking. People start to communicate, correspond with each other. They start to publish books about it. And science was created. So the story goes that the Pope at the time and the scientists at that time, they had a conversation. And the Pope said, well, you cannot touch consciousness and the soul because that's our domain, but you can look at matter. So from that perspective, the history of science fell in place. Scientists looked at matter. Classical science. They claimed that they were outsiders, observers, because the Pope had said so. Then they discovered that actually that was not so. Einstein was crucial in that, because he used grass seeds on the water surface to look at the Brownian movement, because he tried to get an understanding of how molecules might work, and so that led to the theory of relativity. With the theory of relativity, the ignorance of science, which was unlimited, basically they assumed that what they knew applied to everything and all time. That was classical science. It was limited by the theory of relativity, by Einstein saying there is an edge to things, and that edge to things limits what we can see, and everything that we can see is relative to that. So we cannot even be specific about things. So that was the theory of relativity. A difficulty with the approach which was used in that was that Einstein assumed that light was composed of light waves one after the other, and he forgot that there are wave envelopes. So he forgot that if you have wave envelopes, then there's just not one event horizon, but there's harmonics of them, just as if, just when you have one wave or a double wavelength, so you can have an event horizon or the doubled event horizon. And that in that sense, there are layers of event horizons. And if you go into the wave envelope, the integral wave envelope, which is called the soliton, then you need to shift from the perspective of light waves to light holograms, and then the speed of light is not determined by the speed of that smallest wave, but it is determined by the longest wave. And just as on the ocean, the deeper the water, the longer the wave can be and the faster it can go. So then with that understanding of molecules moving, science was also able to look at atoms moving, or the movement in atoms. So that was the quantum theory, essentially quantum mechanics, because it was the mechanics of electrons moving in atoms. So that then was misconceived as well. So that led to the probability theory, for the simple reason that the scientists at the time knew there was something like protons, neutrons, and electrons. They knew that there was something like atoms. They knew that in atoms, the protons, the neutrons, and the electrons sort of hung together, but they couldn't quite work it out. So they invented magic, and this is where science turns into a church, a belief system again. So they said, okay, now we have positive bits, and then we glue them together with neutral bits, because the neutral bits can hang on to the positive bits and then create bulks of positive bits. And then when there's bulks of positive bits, we can have bulks of negative bits flying around them, and that then forms the atom. And of course, everybody should have said, well, okay, guys, this is not how it works, because we know that positive repels, neutrals doesn't glue. So there is something else going on, and we need to have a different perspective. And we cannot really work with that assumption that, well, we don't really know where the electrons are, so let's just guess for it, and let's introduce statistics and pretend that reality is statistics, and take it from there. So quantum mechanics then pretended that everything was electromagnetic, yet denied it. They denied the electromagnetic principles of it, and they introduced this whole concept of probability, because they couldn't be specific, because they didn't resolve the electromagnetics of it. But in any case, science had gone from classical to relativistic to probabilistic, because it went from matter to molecules to atoms, and in doing so, it also shifted from being an outsider to being a reactor to Schrödinger, Schumann, and all the others knew that at the time, interactors. Actually, the Copenhagen Convention was created because scientists at that time knew that everything is electromagnetic. We are electromagnetic too. So things cannot be particular, because electromagnetics is based on fields and waves. And so we cannot be an outsider, we must be an interactor, because electromagnetic fields interacting with electromagnetic fields create electromagnetic fields. And so the Copenhagen Convention was called in to resolve that, and they did not. Basically, they've backfired everything, said that we are still outsiders and that the world is particular, and basically that stalled science for another century. In came tetrionics and showed that what science had found was correct, that if you look at matter, you do find molecules. If you find molecules, you do find atoms. If you find atoms, you do find that the electrons, protons and neutrons move. But tetrionics showed that that movement is because everything is an electromagnetic field, and that electromagnetic field has no particles. It is pure electromagnetic dynamics, or kinetics rather. Dynamics is when there are forces, kinetics is when there is movement. So that means that the quantum field is a geometry. And then tetrionics showed how from the geometry particulars can be formed, that from the quanta and the photons and the W bosons, it is possible to precipitate, condensate a tetrion, that the tetrion is the fundamental primordial form of matter, and that the quantum field, the tetrionic quantum field, is actually the foundation of the universe and universal creation, and that the quantum field, tetrionic quantum field, forms and moves all forms of matter. That's the core philosophy of tetrionics. So in the history of science, we have then discovered that science went from the material to the immaterial. And now I can move from the history to science of science to the onset of sciencing. What is important now is that we need to make a step. We need to make a change, which tetrionics has already done for us. We must realize that we can no longer work with the notion of objective science, for the simple reason that the scientific objects are tied into classical theory only. Only in classical theory that can you say that causality is based on the principle A gives B. And if you go to the molecular dynamics of relativity theory, that's where the chemistry works, because molecules are based on the electron flow in strings of atoms, then you can see that all of it is always relativistic, all of it always chemical, always is always reactive, and always everything is based on a balance equation. A gives B no longer applies. It needs to be replaced by A can give B, but B can also give A, because we now need to include the circumstances. As Einstein said, the event horizon limits what we can see, but also the event horizon can cripple what we can see. If the event horizon, if the conditions change, then the chemical reaction of A gives B can turn to B gives A. So causality is no longer dominant. At the slave model, I tell you what to do. Dictatorship politics. But it is now, okay, I'm willing to do what you want to do, but this is how I'm going to do it. And actually, it needs to be done differently. There is a participatory politics coming in, and at the moment that the shift is taking place from relativity theory to probability theory, that's where we then go from the oligarchy with the conversational politics to the representational interactive politics, that people can see that it is not A gives B or B gives A, but the electric field and the magnetic field co-define each other. So you do what you do, I do what I do, and together we can do more or we can do something else, because the electric and the magnetic are directly interwoven. So the arrow of causality goes not just both directions, but it points at the pivot point in between the A and the B, because the conditions now need to be included in the consideration. And actually, if you look at it at these levels of causality and the domains of science, you can see exactly the same in physiology and physics. So in the anatomy, we have the determinism, that's the healthcare of the West. Healthcare of the East, we have the relativistic balance equations. And in the Far East, we have the probabilities of the conditional interactions, which is where the chakra points, the meridian points, effectuate the calibration of the system within the environment. So in that sense, that operates at the atomic level, and that operates in the pivot point between the electric and the magnetic. The electric is local, the magnetic is non-local. So in that transition of the relativity, the probability theory, which is a third order system, that is where the system then opens up into the environment and the conditions become conditional for what happens, and causality is defined in the midpoint between them. So science realized that that's the case and went beyond that and realized that the movement of the protons, the neutrons, and the electrons at the atomic level has its origin in a subatomic level, which is an electromagnetic field, and causality does not exist at that level, because everything is causation, everything is creation, everything is an ongoing process. So that's where we then have the foundation of subjective science. Subjective science is in phase space, it is in an immaterial, it is in the electromagnetic field dynamic, it is, as Tetronic showed, part of the electromagnetic geometry, which is a holographic geometry. And that means that subjective science essentially is the same as superstring theory, field theory, unified field theory, because that is where scientists already realized that when quantum mechanics was looking at the change of electron in atomic orbits, that it's not about the electron changing orbit, but it is about that somehow, apparently, evidently, these kind of invisible tram rails are already there, that the electron can circle in that orbit, and that there are other orbits which are very defined, very precise, and that we need to understand the whole universe in terms of those orbits. De Broglie, Louis de Broglie, at some point made that more explicit, because essentially he said, if you have an orbit, that is where the wave reiterates on itself and loops back on itself. So that's, say, a wavelength of one. But if the wavelength becomes 1.5, then at the level of 1.5, you have the same wavelength possibility as that of 2 minus 1/2, but the wavelength 1 plus 1/2 and 2 minus 1/2, they can be in counterphase, so you cannot have a standing wave there. So essentially, the wave orbits are standing wavelengths, wavelength 1, wavelength 2, wavelength 3, and the absence of electrons in between is because wavelength 1.5 or 2 minus 1/2 are cancellation orbits. So in that sense, leave away the electrons, leave away the atoms, then the universe is composed of waves which are in phase and waves which are out of phase. When the waves are in phase, you have phase coherence, and then that can lead to a tangible manifest universe. When the waves counterphase and wave cancellation determines what happens, then whatever is material can be dematerialized. So that means that the foundation of the universe is in phase space. It is based on waves in coherence or out of coherence, and that the creation of the universe is about the creation of coherence or the loss of coherence. And in string theory, a vibration of strings like a violin string, superstring theory, more strings on more violins, and the wave, the field theory, strings or waves on the ocean of the planet, or unified field theory, everything is vibration. They're just aspect of that understanding that in phase field there is a phase dynamic, and that phase dynamic is the foundation of everything. And that theory just didn't work because it couldn't show how these vibrations could create matter. So they went into 10-dimensional things and loops within loops and all that. And Tetrionic said, well, when it starts to loop on itself, when you have a quantum connecting up with three other quantum, then this can create a local vortex. That local vortex is the foundation of everything material. It is a wave in a continuum, so it is still immaterial. But by its inert structure, its phase coherence makes it foundation of everything material. So it is the phase coherence which is the basis of the material. And then in Tetrionics we can see that everything that is material is indeed formed and moved by the quantum field dynamic, but that also means that everything physical is the foundation of everything that is and everything we perceive, and it's also the foundation of us. So in us, yes, we have a material component, the object being of our being, but we also have the subjective being of our being, which is the phase field, the information field, the field of consciousness, the alpha field, the omega field, the Akashic field, whatever you want to call it. At the foundation of the universe is a field of phase coherence, changing phase coherence. And from that level up, you can actually see that the subjective, immaterial of science is the understanding that that information field is not just the foundation of science, it's not just the foundation of the universe, but it is also the foundation of us. It is in us, it is only within us that we can perceive that. So that is the foundation of subjective science. Then we have this interactive relationship between the quantum field and the material. Tetrionics in its books describes that beautifully well. Marvelous pictures, fundamental understanding. And in us, we live that. So where Tetrionics talks about the quantum change, in us we experience that as freedom of choice. The principle is the same. In Tetrionics, it is the phase change in the quantum field as a result of which the material field can change. In us, it is a change of the information field as a result of which the relationship in the information field can change. The cells can operate differently. They activate different processes internally. That creates different processes between them, and that creates a different printout of the body. So subjective science is fundamental. And what we can then do is connect subjective science, which is the science of phase space, let's call it phasics as opposed to physics. In that phase space, we that's where we are. That's where we originate. That's where our cells get the information. That's how the cells decide to do things differently. Because there is a change of information, then they create a different process. The physiology changes. You might even get sick, then the anatomy changes, you might even get crippled. But that's because the information which they worked on was wrong. So now we need to realize what we need to stop using objective science for everything that is subjective. We cannot say that you're sick because the body is deformed. We must shift from Western medicine to Eastern medicine and conclude that the body is deformed because the process has become warped. And then we need to shift from Eastern Medicine to Far Eastern Medicine and conclude the process became warped because somehow the way you relate to the environment is out of tune. And then we need to shift from Far Eastern Medicine to Far Western Medicine and say, well, actually, you got out of tune with the universe as a whole because you were no longer connected to the whole. You were only connected to a part of it. So you need to let go of your limitations, resort back into the wholeness of everything. The religions call that surrender. Islam actually means that. And so then you need to have the world image restore your self-image. And the world image is just the way things work, and that the universe as a whole is an expression of what happens in the quantum phase space. So whether it be planets around stars in galaxies, or whether it be molecules in cells in plants, it is always that quantum field, that information field, which is at the foundation of everything. So subjective science is the foundation of objective science, and Tetrionics shows in detail precisely why and how subjective science is the foundation of objective science, simply because it shows how physics is the foundation of physics. It shows how the dynamics, the kinetics in phase space creates the atomic level, and that those connected up create the molecular level, and those connected up create the material level. That the electromagnetic dynamics in the atoms determines the chemistry of molecules, which determines the physics of materials. But we need to stop thinking in terms of objects and realize that an object is just material, is matter, but matter is something in which the electrons have been bound in place. It's called fixed electrons, or a fixed electron lattice, or bound electrons. And that's where we need to use the zipper of manifestation and realize that the bound electrons which form matter are simply electron flows or electron oscillations which keep on repeating and repeating and repeating in molecules or between molecules. And that the electron flows in molecules is based on an electron leap in atoms, so that the electron in an atom moving from one position to the other can correspond with a counterpart movement of an electron in another atom, as a result of which it seems as if an electron goes up and down between them. But actually, it is an electron going from an inner position to an outer position in the one atom, and an electron going from an outer position to the inner position in the other atom. So it seems as if there is an electron going up and down, but basically they just coupled their frequencies in their electron leaps. So the electron leap, which leads to the electron oscillation in molecules, which leads to the electron bonding in materials, comes from a photon leap. So the foundation of everything material, the foundation of objective science, is not in the material and the determinism, the reductionism, the repeatability of the materials, because they are all formed out of molecules. There is no objective science. There is just a temporary stalled form of matter, because in those conditions, the sun's eruption does not fossilize further, but it forms a planet with a hot core, for example. So the physics is an ongoing chemistry. The chemistry is an ongoing electromagnetic dynamic, but the electromagnetic dynamic is just electrons or electron clouds or electron flows or electron fixation taking place, because in the quantum field, that is what happens. So the physical reality, the reality of objective science, the science of object, is simply a printout of the immaterial quantum space, the tetrionic quantum space. So the first level of that printout is the electron cloud in associated with atoms. And again, look for tetrionics to really understand that. The alchemists called that air. They didn't call it electron cloud, they called it air. Same principle, electromagnetic dynamic at the atomic level. Once the electrons couple atoms into molecules and an electron flow in molecules arises, which we then know as chemistry, the alchemists called that the water element, and not the flow of electron, but they call it the flow of water, but it's the same principle, same dynamic, same concept, same understanding. It is that flow level in electrons which then specifies how molecules can dissolve back into atoms or can aggregate to form materials. So that is the foundation of where material science or objective science then starts to form, because then how the electrons get bound in the material substrate, objects are formed, and then hey, ho, below, pronto, then you have objective science. But hey guys, that was 2 centuries ago. We realized that that was not how it worked. That is why classical theory was replaced by, and must be replaced by, and must be replaced by relativistic theory. But that's not enough, because relativistic theory, actually at the same time, has been replaced by, has been complemented by, has been completed by probabilistic science. So the materials can no longer be looked at materials. So objective science can no longer be used. Objective science is simply a reductionistic understanding of things as they are, because the conditions are as they are. But if the conditions change, then everything physical will become fluid again. And move the planets closer to the sun and it will liquidize again. Move the iron ore into the smelter and out flows the iron. Alchemists already knew that. What we now know, it is not about the heat, but it is about the electromagnetic field, and actually specifically that it is about the change of phase coherent in the quantum field. So everything needs to be reduced to the quantum field dynamic. We can no longer talk about the physical. We need to stop talking about the molecular. We need to end the conversation about the quantum mechanics at the atomic level, because all of them are consequential to what happens in phase space. So, as the alchemist said, if I paraphrase it by the zipper of manifestation, the photon leap leads to the quantum leap, leads to the electron oscillation, leads to the electron bonding. Alchemist said, fire, air, water, earth. And now we need to realize we have 4 forms of science. We have subjective science at the fire element of alchemy. That's the level of pure consciousness. That's level of phase space. That's level changing phase coherence. That is where science need to be. Not only where science need to be, but where science is. Because when we do science, when we create science, when we think about things, when we look at things, we are using our consciousness to do so. We are using quantum field dynamics to do so. We are using subjective science. We are using quantum phase coherence to look for patterns in the information field. And then from there, we can deduce how it goes into the atomic energy field. From there, we can sort of infer how it goes on into the molecular time dynamics, and from there on we can then perceive how it leads to material structural states. If you look at it from the superstring or string theories, or from the field model or the unified field model, then we see exactly the same. We can see that the subjective science or phase space is where consciousness, pure information, pure electromagnetics, can have a change in phase coherence. Then when there's one place of phase coherence, it's simply that one quantum in the universe turns upside down, and essentially that changes the polarity of the universe as a whole. We don't notice because other quanta are doing the same, but still, if one quantum turns around, if you want to maintain the neutrality in the universe, another quantum must change, so that already happened. But if 2 quanta change at the same time, regardless of where they are, that will create a shockwave in the universe. That's the foundation of energy. When three quanta change at the same time, that creates a triangle, which creates a circle, which creates a time base. So time is actually the coherence at the third order level. First order level is at the quantum level. Second order level is at the atomic energy level. Sorry about the numbering, because science and physics and physics, they have a shifted dimensional perception. Let me reformulate that. In the quantum field, the fluctuation is a zero-dimensional fluctuation. For energy to be, it is a one-dimensional fluctuation. There's two points on the line. For time, it's a two-dimensional, three points in that space. And for space, it's three-dimensional. You need to have four points to do that. And that's where the numbering system comes in, because when we're working in four dimensions, I had to take some time before I could make that mental shift. It is not one-dimensional, two-dimensional, three-dimensional, and four-dimensional, but it's actually three-dimensional, two-dimensional, one-dimensional, and zero-dimensional. Zero-dimensional is the point, one-dimensional is the line, two-dimensional is the plane, three-dimensional is the volume. And once you see that in place, you can also see how wave aggregation from the point to the line to the plane to the volume is actually the transition from phase space to energy to time to space. And that is where we then have the link between subjective science and objective science. And yes, I know it is sort of rye bread chewing story to be told, but that I think is necessary, because I realized that I'd been put in a totally wrong perception when I was in engineering school learning what they were teaching and realizing that what they were saying was wrong. They already knew that 100 years ago, matter was known to be created from molecules. So we need to stop saying that classical science is the reality that we have, that things need to be verifiable, repeatable, and predictable, because that only is the case when things are invariant. Classical science is about invariance, about, let's call it ignorance, stupidity, not wanting to know, denying change. But that had been changed already, because it was known that this fixed, predictable, verifiable, repeatable material reality isn't material. It's chemical. It's physics. It's based on chemistry. It's always moving. It's always relativistic. It's always changing, and it depends on the circumstances. It will thaw or freeze. And it was also known a century ago already that it will thaw or freeze because the electrons flow differently. If the whole planetary system moves into the Pleiadian photon belt, yes, things will heat up and stop calling it global warming, because it's cosmic warming. Study your physics and realize that if you go to a quantum space, you have an increased electron dynamic, which we perceive as a temperature change, which is simply what's going on around us, for the simple reason that the environment has a higher light field dynamic. The quantum space is more, let's say, dense. And then, of course, it becomes very funny, at least for me, it became very funny, because I realized that the solution was there already. Classical theory, the outsider observer, has been replaced by the reactor of relativistic theory, which has been replaced by the interactor of probabilistic theory, which now we simply need to acknowledge as the creator in tetrionic quantum theory. That, of course, means that we need to change the politics too. Because if things are not fixed and we are not an outsider, then we don't need anybody to tell us what reality is like. Exit the church, exit science as a belief system. We need to realize that whatever science says is as changing as everything else around us. I just look at classical theory, which meant relativistic, then probabilistic, and now Tetrionics has become creationist. We are no longer outsider, we are no longer reactor, we are more than interactor, we are creator. But that means that it happens all within us. So we need to stop looking at what happens around us and react to that, or try to bully or interact with it, not just in our belief system, but also in the politics. We cannot afford a politics anymore where bullies are trying to tell people what to do. We need more than a politics where people sit together and together decide what they do. They need to stop telling each other what they do. We need to have a politics in which the individual realization, let's call it the salvation of the soul or the incarnation in life, is central. And then when everybody connects to the universe as a whole, because we are a pixel in the hologram, then like every hologram, if you have more pixels, the image of the hologram becomes stronger. The hologram can be seen more clearly. So when we connect away from objective science to subjective science, when we start to learn to see how our thoughts are the consequence of the way we process information, then we can make the transition from objective science to subjective science and discover that subjective science has existed for a very long time. It is not what the West believes. It is not the philosophies of let's think about what we think. It is about what the mystery schools have been saying. You need to experience how that thinking process is also affecting your body, and that psychosomatic dynamic is actually that the quantum field of our consciousness, which is the radio information field in and around the cells, determines the cell activity of the cells with all the other cells. So in the psychosomatic dynamic, we can see that it is the information field which determines the material field. So it's not just that we have molecules with a radio field around it, but we have radio fields which are used to have the cells produce specific molecules. And then subjective science becomes really fascinating, because suddenly we can see in everything we know from objective science we can use, but now we can see more than that. We can see that the material is the printout of everything we cannot see. It is a rearview mirror by which we can look into the unknowable. It is our body, this reality as a whole, is the Wilson cloud chamber in which we can see the condensate of what the quantum field is doing. Our body is the printout of what our consciousness field is doing, not just in our body, but throughout the generations, over the generations, in our whole species. Between all species print out a different part of it. We are all like components or elements on the motherboard. All of us are processing a different bit of the same information. Just like in a radio circuit diagram, you have the resistors, you have the coils, you have the capacitors, you have the switches. The switches are at the level of consciousness. The resistor is at the level of energy. The coil is at the level of the time and timing. The condenser is at the level of materialization. So all of these species all have a different part of the hologram. All together show more of the hologram than we experience within us. So all of these species show how much more the hologram of the universe is capable of doing. They used to call it God and say, well, if it exists, it's okay because God already created it. So why does your opinion matter? Science has now become an opinion industry, not much different from the churches in the past, saying you have to believe this because science says so. No, we have already seen that science tend to burn priests when they disagree. Now we need to just remind these scientists, well, we know that if you find it, somebody else might be able to find it too, or somebody might be able to find something else, and together we can know more than we know. So find that you tell your story, but we are way away from classical science, that there is no limit to the validity of what you see. We know that relativity theory also said that whatever you see is limited to your own event horizon, which is not my event horizon. And actually, what you see is determined by the quantum leap that you're willing to take in your mind. But if you don't want to make that leap, I might be willing to make that leap, and I can see the opposite of what you say, what you see. So together we see more. So let's look at what else there is and look beyond the material, because objective science and the scientific object, they're just linguistic objects, they're just models. So let's look at these models. How do we create these models? What are these models in our mind? If we create a language and a scientific object is a linguistic object, then we can, from the linguistic object, see how we think. From that, we can see how our thinking takes place. So we went from philosophy and psychology into the mystery school level of understanding. We can experience how thinking affects us or afflicts us. And we can go beyond the thinking and go into that non-thinking mode where all of the meditation techniques of the mystery schools come in. I say, well, just look at what happens in you when you stop thinking. Because then suddenly you can see that it's not about the waves on the ocean, but that in the ocean things are happening already. And when you are doing that, then you can see the unseen. Because you cannot see it, but you are it. You can feel it within you. The body is a Stradivarius. It resonates the unseen within us. So that's also where the mystery school said, if you want to see the invisible, stop looking. Odin was told to lose his sight so that he could have the inner sight. So many mystery schools say, well, stop looking so that you can start seeing. Disconnect from what you perceive in the beta brainwave level of the environment around us, so that you can go to the alpha level of the dream landscape within us, where things are much more fluid and much more flexible. You can actually see how thoughts form and transform, and the realities are actually a realization. And then when you go to the deeper level, you can see that from the alpha to the theta level, you can see how the organs in the body are actually not just digesting the food, but also digesting the information, and that you're very close to the engine room of how we create our realization, and that there are, they call it the different gods, the different organs, the different components, let's call it different vector spaces, that there is this octagonal space, the octagonal of the Hamiltonian mathematics, in which you have those eight directions of the organs which together create the blood circulation, which determine the integrity of our being. So at that theta level of our subjective being, we see how the psychosomatic actually works, that by our ideas we can change our body, but also we can heal the diseases within us by getting rid of beliefs which shouldn't be there. Because we can also go from the theta level of brainwave frequencies to the delta level, where we actually stop thinking and the universe starts doing the thinking for us. And that's what we do in deep sleep, where the cells reconnect to the universe and the universe restores the integrity, the wholeness of the information of the cells in the body, so that the body can reflect, repeat, reiterate the universe as a whole. And that is called health. Health is when the universe operates within us, and diseases when we interfere with that. So that's where we have done subjective science at the deepest level, but that also is the key, what's needed in the study of subjective science, that we need to shift from the conscious to the subconscious to the unconscious to the out of conscious, to stop looking at what we see around us, to sense what we dream, perceive within us, and then look at where that comes from, what these organs in us are doing, what the gods of the Olympus are doing, talk with them, understand them, see how the zodiac of the astrologers is actually operating within us with different frequencies, with different vector orientations, which together create this hologram of their body. They project it from the first cell, creating the whole body. And that subjective science is actually operating not in those vectors of how do we identify or disidentify, but at a deeper level, that in us we are the hologram of the universe, and our being is a hologram interacting with it, And the more our hologram and the universal hologram are attuned, and the more that through our hologram we can produce newness in the universe, because in us we can operate that quantum change, which Tetronics calls the quantum flip, and which within us we can operate as the freedom of choice. So I will leave it at that for now, with a closing thought that we really do good in studying subjective science, because everything we know in objective science helps us to see how objects are formed. Matter comes from molecules, comes from atoms, comes from changes in the quantum field. So the invisible is seen in the visible. And by realizing that the visible is just a printout of the invisible, we can also in our body understand that the anatomy is the printout of the physiology. The physiology, including our mind, comes from our regulatory system, which is operated by the decisions we take, the decisions we took, which is actually a computational process of information organization, which in itself is based on the pure quantum space of we are part of the universal field of information already. Subjective science is dealing with that directly. Mystery schools have been dealing with that directly. All of the sciences are dealing with that indirectly. So every formulation of reality is actually, every description of reality is actually a formulation of realization. So once you know that, you are already a subjective scientist. Congratulations.